VolitionRx, a multinational epigenetics company revolutionizing cancer diagnosis with the development of simple, easy-to-use, cost-effective blood tests involving a range of cancers and other diseases. Volition's clinical trials in human health have shown promising results in detecting several cancer types, including colorectal, lung, and a variety of bloodborne cancers. VolitionRx. Web address, volition.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Russia, the ruble. The story here is on the battlefield in Ukraine and also on the question of the ruble. The headlines from Europe suggest that there's trouble. Germany and Austria plan for gas rationing over payment standoff with Russia. The paragraphs read, this is Financial Times London. Germany and Austria have taken the first formal steps towards gas rationing as officials rush to avoid a potential halt in deliveries from Russia because of a dispute over payments. Russia has insisted that all unfriendly buyers, that would be NATO, of its natural gas pay in rubles rather than in currencies such as euros or dollars. What is the logic here? Why does Russia want in rubles, given that it needs all currencies such as dollars and euros and yen and Swiss dollars that it cannot access in its foreign reserves in the central banks of the West? Why don't they want euros and dollars paid by the Germans? Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution is here to explain to us why it is this dispute is unresolvable. Because, Michael, Russia wants rubles only. I read that the ruble is no longer convertible, and therefore it only has meaning inside Russia. So what is the thinking, and why is Germany and Austria, why are Germany and Austria refusing to pay in rubles that is itself worthless in Germany and Austria? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. There are two explanations. One is kind of a common explanation. I don't consider it important, but the other one is very important. The less important explanation is that the Russians have this symbolic meaning that the West imposed the sanctions, doesn't want to deal with the Russian central bank, doesn't want to deal with Russian banks. They're all toxic. But now to pay for gas and oil, first for gas, natural gas, then they have to sort of make a disclaimer, make an exception, denounce their own sanctions, bend on their knees, and go to the Russian banks and to the Russian central bank. That's the only place where they can buy rubles, selling dollars and euros. And this way they will pay. So it makes no difference. It makes no difference whether they pay to sellers, the Russian sellers, state-owned companies of natural gas, and those pay back to the Russian government, or Western governments pay directly to the Russian government. However, there is an important difference. The Russian government doesn't trust its own state-owned companies that they will bring back what they earn in the West. So the only way, first, the Russian government on February 28th imposed the rule that Russian companies that export natural gas and oil and other natural resources have to bring back 80% of dollars and euros that they earn in the West. And they are not doing it. They are keeping it in the West. They don't trust their own government. And their own government cannot enforce it on its own companies. So now the Russian government says, forget 80%. Give us 100%. You pay directly. So there is no middleman anymore. The Russian government sells, Western governments buy, and they give rubles, they give dollars and euros for rubles to the Russian government.
Therefore, the Russians believe this scheme, this idea, will keep the money flowing directly to the state and not be kept in the hands of the private enterprises. But the Germans and the Austrians have said no, and the Russians are now threatening to cut off everybody. Of course, that doesn't help Russia. It needs euros and dollars. So therefore, I just want to make sure here, the reporting in the media the last several days talks about the ruble rebounding and that this is evidence that the sanctions are not working. Is it correct to say that the ruble's rebounded when it's no longer something that you can exchange. It's independent of the world's financial system. It might even be worthless. So how is that rebounding?
It is rebounding only in the imagination of the Russian government, of the Russian Central Bank. They set up an artificial rate at which their exporters have to bring back and sell to the government for rubles their foreign exchange revenues, their earnings in dollars and euros. So the Russian government, of course, is interested that the ruble be in these transactions be expensive and dollars and euros will be cheaper. So they're cheating their own companies. So now it's a game of chicken. The companies are cheating the government and the government is cheating the companies, giving them less for more. And but beyond this transaction between two thieves who are trying to outsmart each other, this has absolutely no economic meaning.
The Russian Central Bank, let us go back to the beginning when we first started our conversation following your excellent piece in The Hill that was predictive of where we are now. The Russian Central Bank lost access to its foreign reserves the moment the sanctions were imposed. You send me a publication from the Russian Central Bank. It reads this way: the publication of reviews of the Bank of Russia's activities in asset management and foreign currencies and gold for the period from January 1st, 2022 is suspended. What does that mean, Michael, that the Russian bank is suspending publication of reviews?
In the past, the Russian government every month and every week reported how much they have in foreign exchange reserves. And that had an important information for the market, how to value the ruble. So if Russian foreign exchange reserves increase, this means the ruble is strong and can be supported, whatnot. Now, since some 60% of these foreign exchange reserves are frozen in the West, and the rest are unavailable because they're in gold, they cannot sell gold because there is now restriction from the United States Treasury, and the rest is in Chinese yuans, which are useless for them because this is not a currency to support the Russian currency. It's not a global convertible currency. So the Russians have no access to foreign exchange reserves. Effectively, they have almost nothing. And they don't want to say so. So when they're saying now, we're not telling you, we won't tell you how much we have in foreign exchange reserves, how much foreign currency, how much value we have. We're just hiding it, which means that they have nothing.
Reviewing also the creativity that the Kremlin is demonstrating in these days of these severe sanctions, there was a payment of debt, sovereign euro bonds from the central bank recently, as I understand it. But I was confused as to how or where they found the money to pay the debt, given that it had to be paid in dollars. How did they do that, Michael?
There are several kinds of debt. One is sovereign debt, the debt of the Russian government, $77 billion. The other is the debt of the Russian banks, which are independent ostensibly of the government. And then there is a debt, large debt, $312 billion worth of Russian companies, corporations, businesses. So these are different debts. The Russian government pays debt through the central bank. The central bank pays the debt of the Russian government. That, it said, it will pay from those very foreign exchange reserves that are frozen in the West. So it was kind of up to the Western governments to allow them to pay. And because private creditors who gave loans to the Russian government wanted the money back, then the Western government said, all right, they're paying from their own reserves. We do not unfreeze them, but we allow them to debit those reserves to reduce this by $117 million. Now it is another $650 million, small amounts. So it is sort of at the mercy of Western governments. But when it comes to corporate clients paying their debt, it's a totally different picture. It's what Shakespeare said, the horse of another color. Because some large Russian corporations, they do have money in the West. A little bit, but they do. They have accounts with Western banks. So they ask the banks, they want to pay on their euro bonds. They want to earn dollars. They want to pay interest. And they said, okay, we want to use our own money. Not the Russian government money, not those that frozen. We want to use them and we want to pay the debt. And Western banks, actually Citibank, our bank, said, no, well, you are under sanctions and we cannot use your own money to pay your own debt. So corporate debt is now in default.
The corporate debt, as I recall, the schedule for corporate debt is that more and more of it is due here at the beginning of April. And those companies will not pay their debt. They'll forfeit then.
It depends. Here is the most interesting part of all this, which really surprised me.
We have about a minute. Go ahead.
In addition to the sanctions, there is a private boycott. The private banks, not the government, the private banks, private corporations, private shippers of oil, they refuse to deal with the Russians. And that's how it is. So the banks won't pay this debt.
What we have then is a continuing cascade downhill of Russia's ability to do business in the world. Despite the fact that it has the natural gas, it should have the upper hand, but it does not, because the Kremlin leadership did not anticipate everything that was in Michael's article in The Hill. If they just subscribed to The Hill and understood, perhaps they would have not ventured this far down the rabbit hole. Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.